Back to My Garden, episode 93.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
Hello, gardeners. Guess what? It's finally here. 99 remarkably clever gardening ideas that you can use immediately. It's a free report and you get instant access. It's an epic list of tips, hacks, and gardening shortcuts just for you. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/clever. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish poop? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish poop powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another episode of Back to My Garden. We have a tremendous guest for you folks today. We're going all the way down to Helena, Alabama. I hope I said it right. Deb Gardens in Zone 7B. She enjoys the creative challenges of gardening. She loves working with plants and soil to make spaces where the worries of the day flow away and the birds are happy. Her plants have coped with hard frosts, torrential rains, brutal droughts, strange fungal diseases, snowy blizzards, and the odd tornado. Deb has a great gardening blog where she shares her adventures and her experiments with other plant and nature lovers. We have a ton to discuss. It'll never fit into one show, folks. Please welcome from Alabama, Deb Elliott. Hi, Deb.
Hi, how are you? It's great to be here.
I'm glad you're here. I think you're our first guest from Alabama.
Oh, that's a pleasure then.
I'm sure I said the name of your town wrong. It's Helena?
That's correct. Helena.
Helena.
It's just south of Birmingham.
Okay, great. I gave you a little introduction, and I want to get to know you better, and the listeners want to hear your story. So, Deb, take a couple of minutes. Give us a little bit about your background. How did you get into gardening?
Well, I'm not a professional. When we moved here to Helena, in 1985, we had a lawn out front, and it was surrounded by just these magnificent trees that towered into the heavens. I love those trees so much. I planted a few azaleas, but, you know, life was busy, and I didn't really do much gardening. Then, it was February 1990, we had a tornado that pretty much wiped out everything in the center of our property. The morning after that tornado, I remember standing on our front steps, and from that one spot, I counted 75 trees on the ground. I was just devastated. Then the following summer, I remember I was out in the lawn with my husband, Lou, and we were doing cleanup. And I looked around, and there were these huge holes in the ground where tree roots had just been ripped out of the earth. There were piles of brush. We had piled them up all up and down the road, and the brush was burning. And I turned to Lou, and I said, it looks like we've been bombed. And then I saw this spot of yellow over there, and I didn't know what it was, so I went over to investigate, and it was a sunflower, of all things. We had certainly never had sunflowers on our property before. I took it as a sign from God that things were going to be okay. So I went out, and I bought a packet of zinnia seeds, and I planted them just in defiance of all that mess. Then that fall, I bought several very tiny little Japanese maple seedlings, and I planted them around the perimeter of the lawn near where some of those big trees had been. I had to put rocks around the little trees so Lou would recognize that those were actually the trees that I had planted. A contractor was there one day doing some work on the house, and I looked up and I saw him stepping on one of my seedlings. So I ran over there and said, "You're stepping on my tree!" And he looked down at his boot and he said, "This is a tree," and it was. And fortunately, the tree survived. And now, 25 years later, all those tiny seedlings have grown just into magnificent specimens. From that first fall onward, really up until today, I kept adding plants every spring and fall. And then I began to study garden books and garden magazines, and I visited other gardens, and I tried to apply some of what I saw to my own space. At first, I just wanted to make the yard look better because it was in such a mess. But I guess you could say somewhere along the way, I became a gardener.
Outstanding. That's a good start to the show, Deb.
Yeah, it was not the way I would have planned to become a gardener, but the way it was. I probably wouldn't have otherwise.
Now, folks, Deb and I are going to sit back and talk gardening for 20, 25 minutes. I'm going to have all of her links and resources up on the blog at Back to My Garden. Deb has a brilliant blog at debsgarden.squarespace.com. I'll link that on the site. Deb, I thought we'd start today because I went on your blog, and now people are going to be listening to this and into the future, but right now when we're talking, it's the depths of winter, and a gigantic snowstorm is hitting the northeast of the United States, dumping like 3 feet of snow on everybody. Yesterday, we had our biggest number of people ever listen to the show, and I'm pretty sure it's because everyone's at home trapped under 3 feet of snow. The first thing I saw on your blog is an article about winter berries. I've never seen them. I know most of the listeners around the world, like in Asia and Europe, really don't know them. Can you talk a little bit about the winter berry?
Well, winter berry is a native plant. It's native to the eastern part of North America, all the way from Canada down to, I guess, Florida, and as far west as maybe Texas. And this is a very beautiful plant in the wintertime especially. It's deciduous, so it loses its leaves, unlike most hollies. Most hollies you think of being evergreen with these spiky green leaves. Well, these have green leaves, but they're very soft, and they disappear in the winter. And it leaves behind on the bare branches these beautiful berries. And they come in different colors. A lot of them are red, but now they have some orange cultivars. And so they're just a wonderful plant. The wildlife, the birds and the rabbits, raccoons, all these little creatures love to eat the berries. In fact, you can have a stand of winter berries, and then you look up, and there'll be a flock of birds on them. And in one day, all the berries are gone, but it really is a wonderful sight. Winter berries do like water, and so a lot of times you'll see them along the edges of ponds or lakes, and they're very pretty when those berries reflect on the lake. But they can grow, in just regular garden soil. They don't have to have lakeside. So I actually have them planted along a path in my garden, and I think they're very, very pretty.
Listeners, make sure you go over to Deb's blog because it's photograph rich. Do you do your own photography, or is that a stock photo?
No, I actually do my own photography. I love blogging because I enjoy gardening so much, and I also love to write, and I love photography as well, although I'm amateur at all those things, but all of them kind of come together in my blog.
When I was doing your intro and I got this line from your blog is strange fungal diseases. Gardeners are funny people. We like talking about strange diseases. What happened to your garden?
Well, who knows? You'll go out there one day and you'll just see some black something on a plant. In our climate, it's very humid, and so fungus can just pop up overnight. And so I do not like to treat things like that with sprays. I generally let the garden tend for itself, although there are some good eco-friendly products out there that I will use. I use a dormant oil to cut down on insects, things like white flies that can be a problem as well. But, sometimes you'll go out there and you think, where did that come from? It wasn't there yesterday. As far as fungal diseases, yes, our climate is very humid. And unfortunately, things like black spot or other fungal diseases will just come up overnight at times. I try not to use any sort of products that are harmful to the garden or harmful to wildlife. So a lot of times I let nature pretty much take its course. I may go out there and pick off affected leaves. And there are some ecologically friendly products I will use. But unfortunately, fungus and, things like mildew, those kind of things sort of come with a climate. The most helpful thing is to plant plants that are adapted to the climate and can tolerate that sort of thing.
I understand. I've interviewed a few people from like Arizona, and you know what kind of drought they had. Is Alabama still getting rain?
Oh, yes. We are fortunate. We actually get a good bit of rain here. We do have occasional seasons when we may experience a drought, and a lot of times, unfortunately, it's during the hottest part of summer. But my area gets somewhere between 55 to 60 inches of rain per year on the average, so we're very fortunate that we do have a lot of rain. It's a little bit seasonal. Winter tends to have a lot of rain, be very, very wet.
I gotcha. The listeners are probably itching for me to ask you this. Can you take us almost like on an imaginary tour around your garden? What does it look like? How much space do you have? And what are some of the things you love growing in your garden?
Okay, well, I have 3.5 acres, and right now I would describe it as a stroll garden. I have paths connecting the different areas. I like to wander around it, especially in late afternoon when the light is really just like magic. I think it's a very peaceful space. I have a woodland garden with moss paths and ferns and native azaleas and other shade-loving plants. But really, most of my garden spaces are shady areas. The sunniest spot is near the kitchen, and that's where I have my vegetable plot. I do have a wide variety of native plants, as I mentioned. And I plant these with really birds and other creatures in mind, and I think that's really important. But I'm not a purist. I'm certainly not a purist when it comes to native plants. I want things to be lovely. I now have close to 20 Japanese maples. In my garden, I strive to create a balance, really, between nature and beauty. But, it's not a grand space. It's not elegant. It's not professional. It's not perfect, and it's certainly not finished, but it's a space that gives me a great deal of joy.
I understand now why you love writing so much, because you speak like you write in word pictures. I can just picture you with like a parasol, just strolling in the late afternoon.
Yeah, I like to take in the summertime a cool drink or when it's cooler, take a cup of coffee with me. And when I do that, that keeps me from stopping to work, because I tend to stop and start pulling weeds or whatever, and then before I know it, it's an hour later. So to keep me on task when I'm just going to go strolling around to look at my garden and sort of decide what needs to be changed or whatever, or really just enjoy it, I have to have something in my hand, because that way if I'm drinking coffee, I'm not going to stop and pull weeds, at least most of the time.
Deb, a lot of the listeners are urban dwellers. They live in cities with small patio gardens. And
right,
3.5 acres is like a city park.
I guess it is. But even if you have a small space, you can do a lot with it. One thing I have learned is to plant in layers. you know, here in my garden, I have these big, tall trees, like, you know, the oak trees and the hickories, pine trees. And then underneath, you have things like my Japanese maples, my redbuds and dogwood trees. And then I have all my shrubs. I love shrubs and trees because they cover a lot of space, and I have a lot of space to cover. But then below the shrubs, I have, you know, plants like ferns and perennials and ground covers, and all these layers and textures create visual interest. But you can do the very same kind of thing even with a very small garden. For example, say all you have is a deck out back. That's all you've got. But you could hang a basket from the eave of the house with something like a fern or something that drapes down. And then for a middle layer, you could have a lovely flowering plant, you know, on a small table. And then below the table, say you have several little pots with different kinds of plants in it. And so you have these layers. Now, if you put all those plants on that table, they'd all be on the same level, and it wouldn't be nearly as interesting. And so I think you can do a lot even with a very small space. You don't need acres, that's for sure. In fact, there's been a lot of times I wish I didn't have acres because it's so big. There's so much there. And though in the very beginning, it was just daunting. I didn't know how in the world I was going to manage that much space, the enormity of it all. And that's when I discovered it's really helpful to break the area into spaces. You know, I started really with the front garden, which is creatively called the front garden because that's what I see when I look out my front door. But I just first worked on that one space, just that area I could see from the front door. And then as time went by, I moved on to the other areas. And so that's how I was able to manage the big, big space.
Isn't it fascinating how gardeners talk in terms of seasons and years? It's a different way of looking at time. Like when I had a job in the city, it was you'd break your day into pieces to cope with, you know, get to work, deal with the morning of work, get home from work. But, you know, you had a plan 25 years ago with the Japanese maples.
That's really what I started with. I actually have one Japanese maple that survived the tornado, and there's really kind of a little story to it. I call it my marriage tree because we had bought this Japanese maple right after we got married, and we put it in a pot, and there it stayed for years when we lived in our first place. And then when we moved here, we put it out down in that area where all those big trees were, you know, on the perimeter of the lawn. And after the tornado, I went out there, and that little tiny tree that had been in the pot had, by that time, grown to about 5 feet. Well, I went out there, and there were these gigantic tree trunks all around that Japanese maple, my marriage tree, but not a single branch of that tree was broken, not one. And so I had this real fondness already for Japanese maples, and that's why I went out and bought those first, I think there was maybe 5 of them. As I said, over the years, I've added considerably to them.
I wanted to ask you about your walking paths in your woodland garden.
Yes.
We joke about moss. You can't buy moss at the store generally, and you're a bit of an expert on moss. Can you maybe share some tips about moss?
Oh, yes. I wanted paths in my woodland area because, you know, that helped to create spaces in there. And at first, it was just bare dirt. That area started off with just a whole lot of weeds, and so we used to just cut the weeds to the ground, you know, like with a stream trimmer. And I noticed moss was beginning to grow on the bare ground, so I thought, well, maybe I can just let these paths become moss. And so I did some research on moss, and I discovered that moss does not need dirt to grow. And if you think about it, you'll see moss growing on concrete. And so it doesn't need dirt, but what it does need is air. You have to have air in order for moss to grow because it gets all its nutrients from the air. And, of course, it does need moisture. And so, you know, if you've got moss anywhere in your yard, you can grow moss. The easiest way is just to transplant it from where you have it to where you want it to be. I started just looking around my garden, and we have moss everywhere, so I would transplant it. I would just dig up sheets of it and put it on my paths and then on the bare dirt, and then I would stomp on it and water it in, and really that's all I had to do, and it would grow from there. I would sweep it, you know, in the beginning, and I still do. In the fall, when we'd have all the leaves come down, I would sweep those paths, and then any other time that there's a lot of debris on the paths, I would keep them swept off. And one day, I was out there sweeping my moss path, and remember, this is in the woods, and my neighbor on the other side of the fence through the woods there, he saw me sweeping out in the woods, and I heard him say to his wife, "Come here, I want you to see this." And I'm sure he thought I was crazy out there sweeping my woodlands, but that's what made the moss grow. And so that's the easiest way, is just if you get a little bit in your yard, you can put it to where you want it to be and keep it uncovered, and it will grow.
Wow. Nobody's shared that yet.
I have to mention the thing about the buttermilk. You often see, you know, spray buttermilk on the paths or wherever you want it to grow with the moss. And I think the reason for that is they want to lower the acidity, make the ground or wherever more acid. And as I said, the moss does not need any particular kind of soil to grow, so they don't need buttermilk. But what acid soil does is it decreases competition. Other plants don't necessarily grow well when the soil is acid. But that is not the best way to get moss to grow. The most important thing is if you've got it, you can grow it. And just keep that dirt bare and put your moss down, and then it will spread.
Fantastic. I haven't... When I was a kid, they used to put the buttermilk on the pumpkin patch.
Yeah.
And they would just get huge pumpkins.
Uh-huh.
I think that was a trick to get the kids to drink their milk. You know, if the pumpkins grow big, the kids will grow big.
Uh-huh. That is interesting. I had not heard that.
Is there anything you've tried to grow that just is stubborn or refuses to grow on your land?
I have woodlands, and I wanted to grow ferns and native azaleas and hydrangeas, and in the beginning, they all died. And I was distraught because these are woodland plants that should grow in my area. And then I had a lady tell me something. It was probably the best advice I ever got. She said, "Look at the roots. Look at the roots. These kind of plants have very delicate roots, very fine roots. And I have clay soil." And so I was putting my plants in just down in that clay soil, and they were dying. But what these plants need, and all woodland plants for the most part need, is very mulchy-type soil, soil that's high in organic matter. And so that's what she told me to do. She said, get soil conditioner and, you know, add it to your soil and make it more friendly to these little roots. And that's what I did. I use tons of soil conditioner now, and also plant these kind of plants high. In other words, up on like little mounds so that they can drain very well. And that way, too, they don't have to go down so much into that clay soil that I have. So that was probably the things that died at first that just grieved my heart the most. And now I can say I haven't lost any native azaleas or ferns in quite a while since I started using the soil conditioner.
Wow. Good tips. Good tips. Let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play five quick questions. Attention, garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and Frankenfood? Don't panic. Grow organic. Discover our new ebook for organic gardeners. Get it now. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. Deb, I just looked at the clock and our time is flying by. And now is the time in the show where we play a game called Five Quick Questions.
Okay.
This is your chance to share your wisdom and experience with brand new rookie gardeners. Are you ready to play?
Okay, let's go.
All right, question number one. It's got to do with mistakes in the garden. What's a funny or unusual mistake that you've made that you're willing to share in public?
An unusual mistake that I made. Well, it's not funny, but it's one that I've made, and I think a lot of people make, and that is planting things too close together. My plants always grow larger than what they are supposed to. They haven't read the books. I planted Yaupon hollies 3 feet apart, and now those are probably 6 feet wide each and probably that tall. I do have to keep them trimmed a little bit. But that's happened with a lot of my plants. I end up having to take out plants because I plant them too close together.
I'm totally guilty of that, especially in pots, container gardens. I just figure you might as well use all of the space.
Yeah, and it looks so bare at first, you know, but then they grow.
Question number two. If you were only allowed to grow one plant next year, what plant would you have to grow?
The one plant I really want to grow next year is Bergenia. And this is a plant I've never tried before. It's a beautiful plant. It's got leathery leaves and it has really pretty flowers in the springtime. But traditionally, Bergenia does not like hot, humid weather, which is what I have in the summer. But now I hear there's some new cultivars, so I really want to try that.
Ooh.
They're supposed to be more tolerant of the heat and humidity. So I really do want to try them. They are a woodland, you know, shade-loving plant.
Outstanding. Do you know where you're going to get them from yet?
I'm probably going to have to buy them off the internet. I'm going to see. I like to buy things locally if I can, because I always get a better price and bigger plants, but sometimes I do have to buy things off the internet, so I'm going to have to do some research.
Nice. That fits perfectly into question number three. If you had one or two gardening websites to share, what would they be?
You know, for beginners and really for other gardeners too, I love HGTV. I love their gardening site. If you just go to HGTV and click on their gardening section, it is just filled with lots of good advice and really plenty of inspirational pictures just to get the creative juices flowing. Another website I like is awaytogarden.com. That's awaytogarden.com. That's Margaret Roach's website, and it's got lots of good advice.
Yes, she is magical. I like her stuff.
Yeah, she's great.
Question four. Do you have a favorite gardening book?
Oh, for shady characters like me, I recommend Making the Most of Shade by Larry Hodgson. I just have read that book cover to cover.
If you hear scratching, I'm actually writing stuff down. Wow. A shady character. That's great. I like that. Yeah. I'm the opposite. My back garden is southwest facing, and it just
is it?
Bakes.
Yeah, and that's what happens to mine in the summertime. In my sunny areas, it can be a challenge.
And where I get sun in May and June is not where I get sun in September when I need it the most. So it's really a plan. Question five. If a friend came to you or a family member who said, you know, Deb, I have brown thumbs, can't grow a thing, where would you start them? What plant should every brand new gardener try to grow?
I would tell them to pick a plant. And, you know, I can't recommend a specific plant for everybody because we live in so many different climates and have so many different types of gardens. But I would tell them to plant something with beautiful foliage. Plant something that they love. If they can find something that's native to their area, I love Fothergilla, which is a native shrub here, and it needs more press. Not everybody knows about Fothergilla, but it's a beautiful shrub, and there are some beautiful cultivars. Has wonderful, fragrant bottle brush type blooms in the springtime, and then it has wonderful blue-greeny leaves that persist through the summer. And then in the fall, those leaves turn all sorts of wonderful colors. And so, you know, in my area, I would recommend Fothergilla if they've got a space for a pretty shrub like that.
Fantastic. I'm going to have a link to that up on the blog. And all of those resources that Deb mentioned at Back to My Garden. Make sure you connect with Deb in cyberspace at her blog. Share her content on social media at debsgarden.squarespace.com. Deb, you've been an amazing guest. The time has flown by, hasn't it?
It really has, and I have enjoyed it. Thank you.
I want to invite you to speak to all the gardeners listening. We're now in like 65 countries, which is unbelievable. Deb, can you leave us with either a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement?
I would tell someone, just begin. If a person thinks that they have a brown thumb or they just don't have time, I would just tell them, just start. Start small. And, you know, I think we all need a connection to the earth. It's part of who we are. Our bodies are made from elements of the soil. And I would just encourage them because they can get so much joy from watching a plant grow.
Fantastic. Deb, you've been tremendous. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.